succession number 10046, reel number 1.
Mr. Rudge, reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Rudge?
Warrington.
Which year was that?
In 1920.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a foreman at British Petroleum Company, Warrington.
And how old were you when you left school?
14.
To do what?
Well, I went into Ryland's as a wire drawer, apprentice wire drawer.
How did you come to be in the forces then?
I joined the territorial, South Lancs, Prince of Wales Volunteers.
When was that?
1938.
Why did you decide to go in for the territorials?
Well, I thought it was quite an interesting, well, shall we say, profession. Kept you occupied through the weeks. We had 2 drill nights per week. And then we used to go to camp for a fortnight each year.
What about the outbreak of war? Did that take you by surprise?
Not really. The build-up from 38 onwards was going on quite a lot, wasn't it, really? It looked definitely there was going to be a war.
So, when you heard that Chamberlain's announcement that we were at war with Germany, how did you react to that?
Well, I'll be quite truthful. I packed my kit and was down the drill hall, and then I was told to go back till the following day, to go home till the following day.
But were you dismayed about it, or what?
No. In no way whatsoever.
What was your attitude?
Rather excited, really. Young and foolish, probably. But this is the way I felt about it, and I'm sure quite a number of people felt the same way.
What was your attitude towards Germany and the regime there?
Well, I obviously objected to overrunning Europe like they were doing, and I thought ours was the only country in the world at the time that could possibly stop them.
How did you come to be in the commandos?
Well, early on in it was the beginning of 1940, I think, wasn't it? And my CO, who was over A Company in the South Lancashire Regiment, Captain Copeland, asked for volunteers to go into what was known as a special unit called Independent Companies. And I obviously asked who was going, and quite a number of my friends in A Company were going, and I decided to volunteer myself and go. And Bill Copeland was quite a good officer, and he said, "You'd probably get a bloody big wooden cross," he said, "but I'd like you to come with me." And we went to Stowmarket. Can you scrub that?
No, it's all right, just correct.
We went to Sizewell, as you were. We went from Stowmarket to Sizewell. And down there we met the remainder of the troops who were forming this independent company. And they were a platoon from the Liverpool Scottish and a platoon from the King's Regiment, all belonging to the 55th Div.
Could I just ask you why you decided to go in for this, the independent companies?
Well, excitement. I think we got a little bit fed up of doing guards in different places, Melton Mowbray, Stowmarket, Hucknall, and different places. And I liked Captain Copeland, and I liked the chaps who were going, and I decided to go myself. That was all.
Was much told to you about what the independent companies were?
No, at the time, no. Very little. Actually, we didn't know what we were going to do. When we were at Sizewell, we did a tremendous amount of PT, chasing up and down the beach, and then we were lectured by our new CO. His name was Patterson, Major Patterson, and he gave us a lecture and said, "These are the sections and platoons with which you will go to war," which is quite true. And then we boarded a train and we shot off up to Gurrock, and we went aboard the Ulster Prince and sailed off to Norway. We landed at a place in Norway called Mosjøen.
How do you spell that?
M-O-S-J-O-E-N.
Whereabouts is it, do you know?
Offhand, I couldn't tell you now. It was just in the Arctic Circle. It was Cambridge. It was north of Strondheim.
Who went with you to Mosjøen?
Just our independent company was on the boat. Four independent companies on the boat. And we landed at Mosjøen, and as soon as we were landed, there was a group of Alpine chasseurs, the French Alpine chasseurs, who couldn't get on the boat quick enough to get away. And
did they seem to be terrified?
I don't know about being terrified. They were in rather a hurry to get aboard the boat.
Did they look as though they'd been in combat?
I don't think so, not a great deal. We moved out to different positions. One moment you were down in the valleys, and the next time you're up in the snow. And information was very, very poor. And nobody really knew exactly what was happening. Supposed to be parachutes dropping here, parachutists dropping here and dropping there. But not a great deal happened in our area at the time.
What was supposed to be the objective of your independent companies?
The objective of the independent companies originally was to go to Norway and fight as guerrillas in the mountains. That was the idea. We were kitted out with some marvellous winter stuff and stuff for the climate, and this we never did, because we were withdrawn. We came out of Strondheim. I think it was Strondheim we came out of. We were withdrawn from Norway and brought back to Stromness in the Orkney Islands.
So you never fought the Germans in Norway?
We came in contact with them about three times. Very little, really. We didn't. Okay. As you were, it wasn't Strondheim. It was Bodø we came out of. And Bodø was being bombed, and it was all on fire when we left the place. And we came out on a destroyer called the Greyhound. And.
Did you have any contact with the Norwegians there? Norwegian civilians?
Very little. Very little.
Or the Norwegian forces?
No, very little. And we came out, as I say, we came out on this destroyer called the Greyhound and went to the mothership, which was called HMS Vindictive.
Was there any German air attack as you were embarking?
No. While we were on the ground, there was several air attacks while we were in Norway, you know, itself, but nothing to get excited about. I mean, further experience that I had, Norway was nothing, you know, really. Just warmed you up a little bit and that was the end of it.
Was it dive bombing in Norway?
Dive bombing, yes. There was three planes there, I think. We saw, and I think they were all crashed, weren't they? Our own planes, they were all crashed. Anyway, we came back on the Vindictive and we ended up on Stromness in the Orkney Islands.
What happened to you there?
Well, we were under canvas for quite some time and the usual thing, we had to dig in around the island and what have you, and every time you dug down in the peat you was up to your neck in water. But we were there for a really short period.
Were you told to say nothing about what had happened in Norway?
Correct.
Were you told why that was necessary?
Well, they were withdrawing from Dunkirk at the time too. Oh, it was on the cards for to withdraw from Dunkirk, and we took it that we were told to say nothing about this at the time
because of national morale.
National morale, yes.
And did you obey those orders?
We did.
What was the morale of the independent companies when you came back from Norway?
Well, still pretty good. I mean, we didn't come out without any weapons. Everybody came back with the weapons and everything. And we were ready to do whatever was necessary afterwards.
Did you see any Royal Marines whilst you were in Norway?
No, I think, I'm not quite sure whether the Royal Marines... No, I don't know about the Royal Marines. I know there's other independent companies under... Charles Newman, who was later to become RCO of Number 2 Commando. And they had quite a battle, I believe, in Norway.
Now, I interrupted you with you being at Stromness. Can you pick it up from there?
Well, from Stromness, we came to Kirkintilloch.
How do you spell that?
K-I-R-K-I-N-T-I-L-L-O-C-H.
Which is just outside Glasgow, and we were there for about 3 weeks, I think. We weren't there very long, and we boarded the train again, and we ended up the other side of Fort William at a place called Glenfinnan.
Were you told what you were going to be doing there?
We're still as an independent company and we're going to start training, and we started training very hard, and various courses were going. There's a demolition course going at Loch Islet, and there's snipers courses, and we had civilian ghillies train us on tracking deer and all this business, and in the morning, when we got up in the morning, we used to have to swim to a post out in the loch every morning and swim back again. And you had to make it to this little post, whether you could swim or you couldn't. You got there and back. This was part of your training. And then later on, as things developed, we used to go on schemes into the hills and that, and mountains, 3 and 4 days a week, and we used to stay out there, and we had so much oatmeal, so much chocolate, so many tablets, and used to see how long we could last and live off what we could get on the mountains.
What type of things would you get from the mountain?
Oh, bits of green stuff. Actually, we had a lecture by an elderly chap who told us what we could live on, what we could eat, and what we couldn't eat. You know,
what were those things?
Oh, bits of various types of greenery and what have you, and used to mix it up in all sorts of jollop and with pemmican and all sorts of things.
You used to make a stew out of it?
Well, just hot soup, more or less, that's all. And we used to do this for 3 and 4 days a week. And then we used to come back to Glenfinnan, and the meal generally was stew. And we used to have tables of 8 men, and used to place one big tureen of stew to 8 men right down the independent company. Originally, when we did arrive at Glenfinnan, there was nowhere. So many people lived in the house, in Glenfinnan House, and so many lived under canvas. And we used to do swap about week by week. In those days, there was no dining hut or dining tent or anything. And if it was raining, you used to dine outside. You weren't allowed to take your food in the house. And you used to dine under the trees, correct? Mm-hmm. And this was the way we lived.
When you had these rations out on the mountain, how long could you, in fact, survive?
Well, we survived for a week, no problem. But bear in mind, when you did get back to camp, you could eat the side of a house, no problem.
What kind of physical condition were you in when you got back?
Well, we used to run back into camp. We used to speed march back into camp and what have you. We used to do all sorts of training. And we were pretty fit. Very fit. We used to practice landings. We did a couple of landings from boats on Loch Eel, I think it was. No, Shiel was
Lockheel.
I think that you came across one or two personalities whilst you were training in Scotland, did you?
Oh, yes, we did. When we were at Loch Islet, we went on this demolition. When we went to Loch Islet for this demolition course, we met
Michael Calvert.
Michael Calvert. The film star Dennis Niven was on up there for a period
David
of time.
Niven.
David Niven was up there for.
What was he like, Niven?
Very dapper, a bit of a mad brain fellow. But,
in what way, mad brained?
Well, I didn't come in contact with him a great deal, but. I think all the officers who were in the independent company were a little bit round the bend, not quite really. They were all a little bit mad.
In what way, can you specify?
Well,
would they be different behaved from officers elsewhere?
Well, let's put it this way. There were chaps who you could put your faith in. And they had a little bit of umpity-poo, a little bit extra. That's all I can say.
A bit more life in them, you mean?
Yes, definitely.
Did Calvert make any impression on you?
He was a good lecturer. Good at demolitions.
Which part of the training did you particularly like best yourself? Was there any particular part?
No, I enjoyed, much as you moan and crib, I still enjoyed this business of training and being fit. I mean, we used to only be allowed out to Fort William. I don't think it was once a week, it was every so often. We were allowed to go out on the bus. And if you missed the bus back, you had to walk from Fort William to Glenfinnan. Which you had to do rapidly too.
Did you come across Randolph Churchill on these courses?
Not on that course, no. The only time I came across Randolph Churchill was at Salerno. I met him at Salerno.
We'll come to that later when we come to 43. Can you pick up the story from where I interrupted you?
Well, whilst at Glenfinnan, they decided, whilst we were at Glenfinnan, we were issued with Tommy guns and .45 Colts, and we had so many Tommy guns to a platoon, you know, and so many .45s. Then, after Dunkirk, decided they wanted troops down on the west coast, Sandwich Gulf Course, and we were drafted down to, our independent company went down to Sandwich, and we used to be on the beach at Sandwich, right on the golf course, and used to have to stand to every morning from at dawn and every night at dusk. Whilst we were there, we did nothing but guards and what have you. You know, we did very little training, really, because we were standing to most of the time. And then they decided, it came through, that they were forming the Special Service Battalion. And they wanted people to volunteer or stay with them, you know. Actually, they cleared out quite a lot of stuff, a lot of chaps they didn't want.
What was wrong with them?
Well, some were older than they should have been, and they didn't want fellows unless they would volunteer, and when they formed a Special Service Battalion, they cleared out a number of chaps, didn't they? They formed a Special Service Battalion, and we were moved down to Paignton, and we lived in civilian houses then, in digs. And
what was the role of this Special Service Battalion supposed to be?
Well, at the time, it was they were trying to find troops who could put attacks in or landings on various parts in France and what have you. And this was the idea of the Special Service Battalion.
And then what happened at Paignton?
Well, we were at Paignton for quite a while, and we did lots and lots of training again, speed marches, everything. And then decided to send so many of us on a submarine course. And there were 60 other ranks, 4 officers and 60 other ranks. There was Lieutenant Broom, Lieutenant Walker, Lieutenant Schofield, and Lieutenant Taylor, Larry Taylor. And we went up to Dunoon, and at Dunoon we went on board, I think there was some on HMS Force, and I can't quite remember what the name of the other ship was. And what did happen was we were divided between 2 submarines. One submarine was called the Tigress, and the other submarine was named the Thunderbolt, which was the old Thetis. And fore and aft of the conning tower of the submarines, we had two punts, one punt forward, one punt aft. And there was split up, the number was split up, there was 30, I think it was 30 on each boat. Yeah. And we had so many in each punt. So many came out over the through the conning tower hatch. So many came out through the after hatch, which was a stoker's hatch, really. Those came out over the conning tower, went in the forward punt, and those coming out from the after hatch went in the punt in the rear. And then the submarine just went down, and you paddled off to do your landings. We did this for about a fortnight, landing, practicing landing in the dark and all this business. Then we were taken back to a transit camp in Gurrock. Then on the 17th of December, it was decided that we were going to be moved out, and we were going on board a cruiser called the Bonaventure.
With what purpose?
We were going abroad. As far as we knew, all we knew was that we were going abroad, and that was as much as we knew at the time. As I said, we were going out to a cruiser called the Bonaventure. But whilst we were waiting on the station at Gurrock, I noticed the usual trolleys that they have on the stations with the huge handle in front that they pull up and down, or used to do years ago, and it was loaded with scotch, cases of scotch, and we were disgusted in the fact that we were going abroad and no leave. And I thought, there's all this whiskey going to these blokes at home here, and we're going abroad and not got a drink. So I surrounded one of these trolleys with my section, and with my wire cutters, I cut the wire on the boxes, and we pinched 24 bottles of whiskey. King George the Fourth it was. And handed them out in the section, and we hid them, fastened the boxes down again, and then we went on to a small tug, I think it was a tug, called the Queen Elizabeth. And this Queen Elizabeth took us out to this Bonaventure, cruiser Bonaventure, which was a cruiser with 5.25 high angle and low angle guns. And on this cruiser we were going to, as far as we knew, we're heading out to Gibraltar.